I am so excited to bring this interview to you guys today. Listen, Coach Dan Hawkins was the head football coach at Boise State in the early 2000s. And that's where I really started paying attention to what he was doing. And then he spent time at Colorado and in Canada and UC Davis and all around. He's been a coach for many, many years. And he has so much insight to bring to the table. So during this interview, you're going to want to take notes because I took notes. As a coach myself, in the middle of the interview, I'm asking questions. And I realized, like, man, I need to implement this immediately into what I'm doing as a basketball coach, even though he's a football coach. He has so much great insight as to what a good coach needs to do, a great leader needs to do. And it's just important for us all to hear, even as parents. So I want you guys to pay attention, take notes on the interview, and enjoy this conversation. This is the reason I do this podcast, is to make a difference and to share insights from other people and let them share their stories. And Coach Dan Hawkins is about to do that. And for those who don't know, his son, Cody, he has four children, but his son, Cody, is coaching at Idaho State University right now. So we'll even talk about the time that they got to coach against each other and what they call the Hawkins Bowl and what that was like, but what Cody's doing over there to change up the culture and build that program at Idaho State University as well. So this is a great interview, an awesome one for sports fans and leaders, people who are aspiring to be leaders. This is a great interview for you to listen to. So I hope you guys enjoy this one. Again, this is the Game Time Guru. So,
what time is it?
Game Time Guru.
This is the Game Time Guru podcast, where I interview sports figures from all over the world to help deliver a panoramic view on sports. So whether you're a former athlete, one of the crazies, or simply a casual sports fan, this is the perfect show for you as we peel back the curtains and learn from our guests every single week. I'm your host, Shane Larson, and I'm helping you see sports through a different lens. What's up, everyone? Welcome out to another episode of the Game Time Guru podcast. Shane Larson here, host of the show. Been doing this for 7.5 years. Super excited for today's episode. Man, what an amazing opportunity we have to learn from somebody who I've been watching for quite some time just because of the ties to Boise over here where I'm from. But I also played, I competed against his son a couple of times in high school and all the things, man. It's just funny how life comes full circle and we get to learn from a brilliant mind. And so as you guys heard in the introduction, if you guys wouldn't mind, hit me with that follow button. We're in 182 countries, all 50 states, but we're still trying to build out the YouTube platform. Believe it or not, the audio side, we've got that taken care of. Tons of listeners on the audio side, but we would love to build the YouTube side. So please give us a follow over on YouTube and help us get the channel to continue to grow. So without further ado, we're going to welcome on, he's a man of many titles. We've got former UC Davis, former Colorado, former Boise State. I mean, every coach in the book, you can just name everything, but his name is Dan Hawkins. Coach Hawk is with us. Thank you, Coach, for joining the show.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. I might help you with your worldwide following. I've done football, I think, in 14, 15 countries. So wow. Maybe I'll help your worldwide following.
Let's go. Yeah, we took it global. Now it's going to even be better than it was, man. This is awesome. So Coach, the news came out, just recently within the last 6 months or so that, after 7 seasons at UC Davis, you're taking on some different roles and responsibilities in your life right now. Can you kind of give us an update of, what's your current situation and, I'm sure you still got stuff you're working on, but what's the current situation where you're currently standing right now?
Yeah, I handed it off to Tim Plow, who coached with us. He was up at Boise as well. Great guy, really good coach. He's an Aggie. Not burned out on coaching. I will coach again. I always have professional ADD a little bit. I like to learn. I like to grow. I always think between 5 and 8 years is probably the sweet spot to be somewhere. And my career has kind of mirrored that a little bit. I am helping out at Davis right now. I work with lacrosse, wow, men's water polo, been with baseball a little bit, volleyball. I've been collaborating with the women's water polo coach at Stanford, the rugby coach at Cal. I just got back from Spokane last night, spent a few days with Clint Hurdle, and he's with the Rockies now, and their affiliate, the Spokane Indians there. So hanging out with him. I'm still learning. I'm still growing. Working with an Australian guy up in Toronto who collaborates with a lot of Premier League teams. So it's been fun branching out into a bunch of other different sports and whether it's leadership, motivation, mental health. So, my mind is spinning and I'm filling my bucket intellectually and hopefully helping some people along the way.
Man, this is awesome. It's cool that you're actually like still always growing. That's one of the things I admire about like leaders like yourself, that if you're continuously growing, like you're wanting to grow, you don't ever feel like you've capped out and you're expanding your knowledge and skill sets with other sports and everything. I think that's super cool. Now, just recently, well, relatively recently, I should say, your son has taken over the Idaho State position and you guys had a chance to compete against one another. I guess they called it the Hawkins Bowl. But I just want to get your take on that because that's a very rare thing to have happen where you get to actually coach against your son, which I want to get into that too. Cause I'll give you a little insight to Cody here in just a little bit, but just wanted to get your insight there before I forget to ask that. How was it in that particular environment?
It was probably the worst 60 minutes of my life. Cody really has kind of become my best friend over the years. Just obviously he's my son, but we've had a bunch of football. Obviously he played for us at Colorado. He coached with me here for 6 years. We've coached together internationally. So both personally and professionally, we've had a lot of intermingling. So going against him was really, really tough. And he is super talented. He's super smart. I said this before, they outcoached us, but we had the Valley View zone, Lance Larrison, and that was kind of the deciding factor in the game. But it was tough. It was tough. And he also knew how I thought and how we thought. And, I mean, he's out there yelling to their defense, and we're getting lined up. And so he helped to put together a pretty good game plan. And we were lucky to get out of the dome with a win.
Oh, that's so cool, man. It's so cool. I want to give a shout out to Cody, man. Like, this is something you probably don't know, Coach, but when I was he graduated, I think the same year that I did, I think it was 06, but anyway, he was at BK. I was over at Meridian, and there was always this discussion, like Meridian won state our senior year for football. And then obviously like Cody was running shop over there at BK, and they were like, there's the discussion of 4A could play 5A. What would happen? Who's the better team? Yada, yada, yada. But in basketball, of all things, in the summer, my junior year, we were playing them in a basketball tournament, and I tore my MCL. I got collided with knees. You know, it didn't require surgery or anything, but it kind of hurt, and it took me out for a couple games, and it was against them. And Cody, literally, I didn't even know him besides that he was, you know, the coach's son, but like everyone was like, oh, that's the coach's kid or whatever. But he was like the most respectful, like, competitor I've ever gone against. He didn't know me. He's not the one who collided with me in the middle of the court, but he came over to me after the game to check on me to see how my knee was. And then the next tournament that we had, they were competing in the same tournament, and we weren't playing them, but he asked me how I was doing. I was like, oh, you remembered who I was. And so he asked me about my knee, and I really appreciated that about him. So anyway, that's something that's always stuck in my mind 20 years later. You know, I've always kind of watched from afar, see how he's been doing, like playing at Colorado with you, and then obviously the coaching stuff. And then to see him now completely revitalizing that Idaho State program, like, I mean, that's the talk over here. I mean, I cover a lot of high school sports here in Idaho, and dude, people are looking in Pocatello now, whereas before, like, that wasn't a thing. Like, no one wanted to go over there, but now it's like, oh dude, what's going on over there? You know, like, yeah, he's got something going on. So I just want to give a shout out to your son, because I have a lot of respect for that guy, but it speaks to you as a father too, because I think obviously you don't just come out the womb that way. Sometimes you do, but like, I mean, think you're molded into that with the examples that you have. But
he gets a lot of that from his mother, who I always say is the reincarnation of Mother Teresa. But he's always been that way. He's always been a thoughtful person. Short bird walk, when he was playing for the United States national team, they played Australia, and they just destroyed Australia. And Cody was so great with those kids on that other team and befriended those other guys. And that really is what kind of started the whole international flavor really for him. And then it bled on to me, but he's always been that way. And he gets a lot of that from his mom. And so, yeah, he's down in Pocatello, and he said, when he went, he goes, hey, we're going to lead the nation in passing. But he didn't say yards. He just said attempts and having fun. And so I think it's an extremely positive atmosphere there. I've been at some places. It's really all about the people. It really is. It's fun to be in better geographic spots and all that, but at the end of the day, it comes down to the people. and your experience. And so I think he's providing those guys with an optimal experience. And, you know, we'll see how it goes down the road. But they did lead the nation in passing, not just in attempts. And I think those kids are having a positive experience, so they'll grow.
Oh, yeah, 100%. From what I've heard from the athletes that are playing there, which I won't call names out just to be safe, but they've all said positive things. So, yeah, something's brewing over there, and it's pretty cool to see. Like, it's a cool feeling. So, you know, Coach, I got a question for you. You know, obviously, you were at Boise State. I'm a Boise State alum. But you were at Boise State when it started to hit that, like, I call it the hockey stick growth. It was starting to really ramp up, right? And then, you know, when you left, it was the Humanitarian Bowl or the NPC, whatever the bowl was in Boise that you guys, I think, played Boston College was probably your last game, if I'm not mistaken, at Boise State. And then you went over to Colorado. And if without getting into the weeds or anything, is there like a favorite memory you had during that era at Boise State as a head coach at Boise State? Because you were a vital piece to that growth that has been pretty much sustained for the most part since then. I mean, that was the part where it shot up, and people need to give you your, you know, what we call the flowers. Give him his flowers, dude. Like, he earned that. He's the one who built that with the recruiting and everything and built that program. I just am curious what like your favorite memory was of being at Boise State.
Yeah. I don't know. I think everybody kind of has the story a little discombobulated, if you will, but if you look, I mean, Lyle Smith won national championships. Tony Knapp won national championships. Jim Kreiner won national championships. I tell people, Boise State has always won. It is a good place. And the school supports football. The community supports football. It's a good place to recruit to. It all starts with players. I was fortunate to come with Dirk coming in on the heels of Houston Nutt. And Dirk really was the one that got the ball rolling. He really was. And if you know, I'm a science teacher, you know, inertia is takes the most. And he got the ball rolling. And then we were able to kind of push it up the hill a little bit. And I used to tell all the people in Boise when I first moved there, of course, the team from up north, everybody favored, and they'd had their way at times with the Broncos. And I just said, wait till there's a little continuity and wait till things get going and you'll see what happens here. And I think we were able to provide some continuity, and then the ball got rolling. I think really what I tried to do was inspire people, because you could see, you look at Nebraska or some of the teams around the country that, you know, Boise State football could be the item in the state. And so you saw the potential. And so I tried to realize that and get people inspired. And I remember telling people we could be a top 15 team and people looking at me like I was crazy. And then, you know, eventually we were. Chris Peterson had a big, big part of that and continued to do that. But I think Dirk Cutter really, he's kind of the pivot in this. But again, make no mistake, Boise State has always won. And so I was very fortunate to be a part of that. And then obviously Pete won and Harsin won. And so I have no doubt that Spencer will win. So favorite moments, it's really hard to – I always kind of, I'm a little quirky sometimes, but I really think the play that sent Boise State on its rise, believe it or not, I was an assistant. We ran 27 Ted to the boundary against Utah State and gave Gavin Reed the ball. And we were down and out against the Aggies down there. And he went 70 some yards to the house and changed that season and turned that around. Like to me, that is the play that kind of started all of this. And then there were a ton of moments along the way. I loved how I remember we beat San Jose State pretty good, and our guys were disappointed the next day when we met that we didn't play better. We beat Hawaii once pretty good, and they were disappointed that we didn't play better. Those moments really, really stick with me. Obviously, the Fresno State game where David Carr was the quarterback, and really, my favorite moment in that game is when Greg Sasser, who was a former walk-on running back turned safety, we're down to the last play of the game, and you know, I stick my head in the huddle. I'm like, "What do you guys want to do?" And Sasser's going, "Hey, let's go after him. If we're gonna die, let's die on the sword." And I'm like, "Hey, I'm for you." I thought that was awesome. And we did. We blitzed him. We sacked him, knocked the ball out, game over. But those are the kind of moments that kind of stick with me.
Oh, man. And you talk about those, though, Coach. It's so cool because I was in the eighth grade when that game happened. And I remember where I was when I watched it, the Fresno one, I should say specifically. But, oh, my goodness, the Swilly catch, getting sandwiched, and then that blitz at the end, just like getting, oh, man, like the nerves involved with all that. That's so cool, though. See, like you're part of some really cool – but you're right. Boise State has been a winning program. I just feel like, yeah, and that – I just felt like that era was just like maybe another – supercharge, but I like that you gave, you know, kudos to Dirk.
Well, we also think about it now. That was also the era when ESPN started putting more games on TV. We were a part of that. We were playing a lot of Thursday night games and Friday night games and getting a tremendous amount of exposure. And then again, it all comes down to players. And so you start getting a lot of really good players. And obviously we had really good culture going on, and you throw that together, And it's going to be dynamic. So there are a lot of forces at work there that helped us.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, then you moved on over to Colorado, and obviously, like, there's the infamous, or sorry, I should say infamous, the famous. This is Division I football. It's the Big 12, like the famous quote there. But it's interesting because now, like, you see, like, Coach Prime is over at Colorado. Colorado seems to be a spot where, like, you know, they get a little bit of publicity with new coaching, and it's just kind of like one of those spots. But it was interesting to watch the tenure over there, like, because I thought you guys built something that was special, and you guys were actually at least competing, and I thought it was awesome. And I'm just curious, like, your overall thoughts of your tenure at Colorado, and maybe some of the differences that you noticed there specifically compared to that of, like, Boise State. Was the competition that much higher? Was the fan support better? Were, like, I mean, just the little intricacies of the game that you noticed at Colorado as compared to Boise State.
I learned a great deal. I really did. You learn through adversity, for sure, or at least you should. And I took a lot of notes and could write probably an entire book about the experience there. It's interesting because I'd won a bunch of places before Boise State. And, you know, really what I should have done at Colorado was looked at the entire landscape. Was the competition better? Yes, it was. I think we played in my time there 5 or 6 Heisman winners / runner-ups, like ballers. I mean, Colt McCoy, RG3, Sam, what was the name from Oklahoma? But
Bradford.
So,
holy cow.
What I really should have done is, I think when you're behind the eight ball a little bit, to me, the equalizer is either you just throw the snot out of it a lot and or you run the option. Well, it's hard to evolve from the option. And ironically, that's what Bill McCartney built it on, was the option. You know, Cody's kind of learned from that a little bit down at Idaho State. Like, hey, just go in and be really great at one thing and make it really tough on people. And they run a tough defense as well. So I needed to do a better job looking at the Big 12, the landscape, and where we were, and be able to fit that part of it together. We tried to get into the no huddle kind of somewhere in the middle. I wasn't really liking where that going. We had to back up. That was a problem. It's interesting, the quote that you talk about. It's funny because I was really kind of hamming it up with some guys. It wasn't on video. I wasn't really that mad at all. We were just kind of yucking it up and hamming it up. And a guy had recorded, which I knew he was recording it, and it sat on the newspaper site for like 2 weeks, and somebody caught on to it and thought, oh, my gosh, this guy's lost his mind. But it was a true story, but I was really more ham and egging it than anything else. So, plus, I tell people, if you know me and I get really mad, I can barely talk. But I learned a great deal. And it helped forge me. I told the guys at Davis when I came here, I said, you're getting the best coach I've ever been, the best version of myself. Because, and I know it's kind of corny, it's one thing to take over teams that are pretty good and you do well with them. It's another to kind of build them up. It's another to start from scratch. And you learn that whole, that's why in this whole leadership game, I think I've been a part of 20 teams, 20 different teams. More than half of those, we've won championships. They're all different. They all take a variety of different skills. And the leadership lessons you learn are dramatically different. The strategy is dramatically different. And like I said, we had kind of got the thing going at Willamette and went to the national championship. I came there, learned a lot from Dirk. He got that thing going. We kind of used the similar template and pushed it along a little bit farther. But I needed to step back when I went to Colorado and say, hey, what does Colorado need at this point, at this time? Remember, Texas is just coming off the national championship against SC with Vince Young. I remember sitting in my living room at Boise going, hey, we got to play those guys next year. So it was a step up in every way, shape, or form. And the reality was I was catching up. I'm not the smartest guy around, but I'm a learner. And I was learning, and I get where they're at. And, you know, it was time for them to find somebody else. So we'll see how it bodes out for the Buffs. I mean, it's a magical place. It's a cool place, and I hope they get it going.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. It's no different than the business world. Like if you're getting into the corporate sector or whatever, you know, and you go from one business to another. I'm currently, at the time of this recording, I'm actually legitimately moving from one, you know, I'm going to another company starting this next week. And I've been at one for 6.5 years, and I'm taking those skill sets to another one. But that's why I'm curious to learn from you, because I know it can't all directly transfer, but I need to like take the ones that can, the skill sets that can transfer to that next role at this director level role, and then, you know, learn the new industry, the new company, and the new ways, and be able to adjust. And so, like, I think you can learn a lot through sports leaders like yourself. That's why I'm super excited about the timing of this interview, because of that, because you have all this experience, and what you just said there is like huge, because I can learn from that too. Just like, okay, we can find the template, but we got to see what we can do to make what's working here.
You can call me offline. I've been helping a guy reorg a bank. Some people are in national defense, some people that work with FEMA. So I've kind of been consulting and helping. And there's a book that came out, The $1 Trillion Coach, about really a former football coach that helped all these IT guys in Silicon Valley, because you had 24, 25, 26-year-old geniuses in tech but knew nothing about building a team, and he was kind of the force there. So yeah, a lot of those lessons, but you just got to keep throwing yourself in the fire, and you learn and you grow and you get better. And unfortunately in sport, and it happens in business too to some degree, but in sport they kind of want to just throw mud on you and say, well, you can't coach. But as many of my guys in tech told me, they go, hey, if you're in tech, everybody'd be after you. They want the people that have tried and failed, made mistakes, and learn and grow. And but in sports, everybody wants the soup du jour. You want the can't miss hot commodity. And you know, I say this all the time. John Wooden, 15 years to win the national championship. 15 years. I mean, Coach K, I think it took him 6 years to have a winning season. But nobody wants that anymore. You know, they want. I mean, think about Spencer now. I mean, they want Spencer to come in and get 10 wins and go to the Fiesta Bowl and get back in the playoff picture. I mean, so that's hard to do. That's hard.
It is. It's interesting, the landscape of just the world in general. It's just a quick win landscape of everything. Everybody wants, like, I talk to people about my podcast a lot. I'm like, dude, I've been doing that for 7.5 years, and people will do a podcast. They'll get really motivated about doing a podcast and doing this stuff. And then all of a sudden a year later, they're not doing anything anymore, because they're like, well, no one's listening to it and all this stuff. Well, I'm like, well, you got to spend that first year, 10 months to a year, like finding your voice and learning how to, you know, run this like a business. It's not always going to be, you know, glitz and glamour and all that stuff, but you got to be able to utilize that stuff. And everybody just wants a quick win. So that goes right into the coaching side. Like you said too, it's interesting what our expectations are in this fast paced society, but it's not realistic. But I want to also talk about the landscape shift in college athletics. Now that you're kind of talking about like working with other sports, you're, you know, at the FCS level, FBS level, you've got different coaching experience at different levels. And we've got name, image, and likeness, which is basically the wild, wild west. We've got transfer portals that are, you know, there's literally like no rules right now. It's like everybody, some ways it's good. I feel some ways it's like, man, we've got to find some sort of regulation here before it gets too crazy. But as a coach who has coached the majority of your career in one landscape, it's almost like Saban, you know, the majority of the career is coached in one landscape, and now it's drastically shifted. I just kind of want to get your thoughts on the overall shift of things for athletes in the college athletics world. I mean, they can get paid if they want to, regardless of which sport or which level they're competing at, but they can also transfer. And it is it harder? Is it better? What is your thoughts overall on that?
Well, again, that's probably a 2-week podcast right there.
Yeah.
I think it all started, quite frankly, with a lack of leadership. I think everybody in sport saw shades of this coming on some form or fashion. Nothing was really ever done about it. It reached an epic proportion, and then it's chaos. It's anarchy. And I would start one in terms of being able to transfer. I've been in favor of that for a long time. I always say coaches can leave, ADs can leave. Why can't players leave? I mean, if you get deceived by a coach to go someplace, or if that coach leaves or your coordinator leaves, why shouldn't you be able to leave? Like I'm probably a libertarian at heart, and I just don't get that. I realize, okay, you know, they feel like they're not playing. Okay, it's like Jurassic Park. Nature will find a way, and it'll normalize, and kids will start to figure out it's not that easy just jumping and going someplace else, and they'll come to understand that there'll be a few trial and errors along the way that others will have to learn from. So truthfully, I don't really have a problem with that. I think they got to figure out the timing of it a little bit better, because we're in the portal again right now. There's one in December that in terms of recruiting and the high school kids. So I'm for that. I think it should get normalized a little bit and figure out the right time of it. Again, NIL has went from, you know, how does Nick Saban get $11 million a year and his star quarterback gets nothing? And I get that. But now we've decided, well, the best players should get a Lambo or a new 150. And I get that to some degree, but there's going to be some damage with that done along the way. I do believe that kids should have an opportunity, whether people want to buy their jerseys or and make some sort of recoup some off of that. But again, there's going to be some trial and error of some kids learning and failing and dealing. You're going to have some people don't file tax returns and they're in trouble with the IRS. There's going to be a lot of that going on. You've got, again, some movement with people wanting to be employees. And I know when I was at Colorado, I talked to our guys and I said, guys, I'm all for that. But do you realize all this gear you get? That's an extra benefit. You're paying taxes. Do you realize the tickets you get for games? That's an extra benefit. You're paying taxes. Like all the stuff you start bringing up, they're going, what? You're like, yeah, if you're an employee, you're paying for that stuff. So, you know, they need to kind of figure that out. I would say this, Shane, I think everybody, our whole nation, I think, is dealing with, I call it, general discontent. I think when COVID hit and everybody got to go sit on their couch and collect paychecks and not do anything, yeah, that was pretty good for a while. And now we're out in the real world where there's problems and there's issues and there's people and there's failing. And we're kind of in this general stage of discontent. You still have kids. You're still developing people. There's still the love of the sport. And all these coaches that I talk with and deal with, I go, cling to that. Because there's been a number of changes along the way in other ways. I mean, my school used to be a D2 non-scholarship school. And now they get, when I was here, we bought our own cleats. I bought my own helmet, for crying out loud, when I played here.
Wow.
Like, so it's growing along with that and trying to figure out how do we feed these kids? How do we give them cost of attendance? I mean, I know, like for our guys at Davis, they have to stay in the summer and we don't give them a scholarship in the summer. And to live in Davis is not cheap, and to feed yourself, that's probably a $6,000 expense to stay in the summer. Well, can we figure that out? So I think progress never comes easy. It's come fast. It's come hard. Those that have been in it a long time are thinking, I can't do this. I kind of look at it like a challenge. I mean, it's like when I went to Canada and you had to have 7 Canadian starters and you had to have 19 guys on your, I loved it. I love the rate. I love all that stuff, the wacky special teams. So I look at it like that. It's still coaching. It's still kids. You're developing kids. You're trying to graduate kids. There's a lot of noise going around, but I don't know. Yeah, I'm kind of the old guy on the porch, but I tell people I'm a child of the 60s and 70s. So I was around when Kennedy got shot and Nixon got impeached and kids got shot at Kent State. And there was marijuana and steroids and AIDS and you know, the Vietnam War, for crying out loud. So our world's kind of been in a lot of turmoil. It's just that now it gets delivered to your pocket 24/7. So keep your feet on the ground, do what's right, keep your heart in the right place and your mind in the right place with the kids and the sport, and just kind of deal with the noise a little bit.
Such interesting insight too. And I appreciate you even bringing all this stuff up, because a lot of these athletes, I work with a ton of high school athletes here in Idaho, and I coach basketball. So they are trying to get scholarships, they're trying to do this stuff, and they're trying to leverage their name, image, and likeness. And they're trying to get their piece of it as well. They're trying to get a bag, as the kids say these days. And so it's like, but those little things that you just mentioned, like taxes, that's such a, like, it's a forgotten thing, right? Like, if you're getting paid, is that a loan? What are you going to be paying taxes on it? And you've heard some of the stories, I'm sure, but there were a couple kids already that didn't even realize what a 1099 was. They had a $100,000, you know, contract they got from a social media ad, you know, campaign they did. All of a sudden they get a 1099 at the end of the year and they're like, why do I have this? Well, you owe 30% of that. Where's that at? Well, I don't have any more money. It's like, well, you got 30 grand. You got to pay off of that. Like, what are you going to do with it? Like, you got to find it somehow. IRS is coming after you. Like, all these little things are starting to come up, but it's cool. Like, people like yourself can at least educate it, but also understand how to, like, navigate through it.
Well, and that's why they need mentors too, Shane. To me, it sounds corny. I used to say, quit trying to be a winner and just be a winner. I mean, quit trying to win and just be a winner. Don't try to brand, just be the brand. Like, and then that stuff will come to you. And every coach, as you well know this, when you start getting hung up on the product, you're in trouble. Like, you need to cling to the process. And if every kid is trying to be the best version of himself or herself, that stuff will come to you. I mean, case in point, Caitlin Clark. Why is she a sensation? Because she can shoot the rock. She can fill it up. Like, she's exciting. People didn't really know about her, certainly 3 years ago. Nobody really knew about her other than, you know, if you're in Iowa and all that. But you go back and look at all the training and all the development she did and all the work. And then all of a sudden she's a superstar and things kind of start happening for her. But I think, and again, kids will learn this through trial and error of like, yeah, I remember when Shane went out and did that and he got in trouble and let's not do that. But there's going to be some guinea pigs, some social guinea pigs that serve as both good and bad examples. But gosh, just invest in yourself and your craft and be the best version of yourself. And then that other stuff, the universe will take care of you and it'll come to you. But when you start trying to put it the other way around and try to be something you're not, or focus on the win or the scholarship, like that, I think it's funny about the scholarship, and I get it. I was not a scholarship player, but like, so many people are hung up on that. It's more of a reward. It's more of an ego. It's more of like, I'm a scholarship. You know, I mean, look at baseball. They give 12 and a half scholarships. There's a lot of guys that are walk-on players in baseball. But yeah, all that stuff, I get it. I understand it. But just be all about it. Just be the thing. And then all that other stuff will find its way to you.
I love that advice, man. That's going to be a social media clip right there, just because I love the advice. This is what I'm excited to talk to you because of all this. Like, you're bringing up so many great points, and I appreciate that. Now, as a coach myself, obviously just basketball at the club level, but, you know, I take it seriously because I want to help these kids have an opportunity at the next level, help them get better at their sport, but also get to the next level. And I have a question for you from a leadership perspective. And I know there's other coaches here that we've talked about this, but let's say you have an athlete coach that's phenomenal athletically, but the effort might not be there, or they don't fully understand how to maximize that potential that they have. And as a coach, I'm trying to find ways to optimize that. Like, how can I maximize their potential? How can I get them to see it, for one, and then like encourage them to do it consistently? Because they have the athleticism, but it's going to the work ethic or something's missing. So from your experience in coaching at different levels, professional, collegiate, Division I, FCS, whatever, What would you say to other coaches that are trying to take their athletes and maximize their potential?
Hey, again, that's another week long podcast. But so I would back up a little bit, and you always have to ask yourself four questions. Who am I? Where am I going? How am I going to get there? And why am I doing this? And so you got to get inside the soul of a person. And, you know, hey, the reality is maybe the why for them, Shane, is not big enough. It's not. And that's the other thing. Sometimes I see parents and coaches, they want desperately something for this kid. And I'm going, what does the kid want? What does he want? So, you know, I think there's a lot of psychology involved with this and finding out what do they really want? Where are they? What means the most to them? You know, people always thought with my kids, oh, yeah, they turned out to play football and sports because I'm not kidding you. I never, ever did that. I just said, I want you to do something. You can play the piano. You can be in scouting. I don't care. You don't have to play football. I did not force it on them at all, ever. Now, when they were in it, you know, things like being dedicated and being a team player and all that, I was all about it. But so that's a lot of it, is getting inside the kid and understanding what do they really want. And then, you know, the motivation, I always say this, I go back to Maslow. I mean, it's everybody wants power, belonging, competence, and being needed. And we all have to have those, whether it's a marriage or a job or a team. Those are the things that ultimately motivate people. And to me, that's at the heart of every psychological issue. And that's at the heart of every motivational issue. So sometimes we all know, you know, God giveth, God taketh away. I mean, there are guys like me, a terrible athlete, just my want was through the roof. Like I would do anything, you know, but I was not very talented at all. And sometimes you have find people that are super talented that they don't. When you get the Michael Jordans and the Tiger Woods and some of those guys, Otani, you get those guys, that's where you meet at the pinnacle of like super talented and super motivation. And, you know, you have unbelievable athletes. So the other thing I would say a little bit when you're talking about, and I get your role as a coach, and I really wish, again, all these youth coaches, just pour into the kids where they are. I think there's a whole cottage, get them on. No, your job is to provide a meaningful experience. Let them be the best version of themselves. And then if those things happen, fine. But there's limited amount of scholarships. There's limited amount of opportunities. Some of those kids will feast and grow. But we're trying to make the end game. That's not where it is. It's the process. You know, if you want to be great, hey, go work on your dribbling. Go work on your offhand. Go work on your passing. Go work on your shooting. Go work on your speed and your agility and dive in and do that. You know, and if it ends up you're a scholarship basketball player or get a chance to play basketball somewhere, great. But I just think I think our priority is just a little out of whack. I mean, I'll back up. My son-in-law, Tim's up there, and Tim Brady, and he coaches a youth team, a travel team baseball. And I love it because those kids, it's 11U. They all play in the infield. They all play in the outfield. They all pitch except for one kid. He has left-handers that play shortstop and third base. He has left-handers that catch. Like, develop the athlete and develop them and let them, you know, become people. They have a lot of fun and they play good baseball and they win a boatload of games. But like Tim's main objective is to develop these kids as people and baseball players. And then if they love baseball, they'll keep going. And that kind of happened with my other grandson, Jackson, who's pitching at BK right now. He got with a bunch of guys, the new baseball, the new kids, and he had a lot of fun and he blossomed and he went on. But we're trying to win too early. We're trying to force too much on these kids. We're not really in, you know, you've probably heard the story of Steph Curry's dad. He took him out of travel ball because he wasn't learning anything. You know, they're just playing. He's not learning skills. I could go on. I mean, again, I just spent time with Clint Hurdle with 17 years major league manager, you know, they want kids that play other sports, but it's getting harder. He even talked about now, like youth kids, they won't let pitchers hit.
That's crazy, dude.
But that's why I say I would just go out and say, hey, you know, the kids that play for me, I want them to think that was the most fun I've ever had in my life. And if they have a lot of fun and they're really into it, they're probably going to be the best they can be. There's a lot of things to unpack there. And I obviously am very passionate about that in kids. And one of my greatest coaching accomplishments was my son, Drew, was playing at Sacred Heart, and we won third place in the Hallisey basketball tournament there. And it was a thing of beauty. It was a thing of glory. Like all these kids, you know, of course, in junior high, you get them in all different shapes and sizes. And we had a lot of success in the past, and we had a blast. And those kids got third place in the Hallisey. And I'm not too sure that wasn't one of my greatest coaching moments ever.
This is what I've really enjoyed getting to know you a little bit better the last 40 minutes or so, is because like, you find joy in like the process and the journey. And you've referenced that a couple times. You referenced process, you referenced journey two or three times now. And I can see it. Like you live that, what you're saying. And so I'm going to encourage those who are listening. If you're listening to it on your phone or whatever, get the notepad out on the phone and take notes of this. Cause I'm doing the same thing. Like, this is so cool. So I'm going to remember that, like just pouring into the kids. I got
to feel free to throw my email in there. If you want, if people want to hit me up, I'd be more than happy to help them.
Well, I was going to ask you real quick as we get to the end of the interview, I kind of want to, well, I'll get to that piece, but before I ask you where to contact or where to find you, basically, I want to kind of just two questions on leadership, basically. One, you've referenced a couple books. Do you have a favorite leadership book that you've taken with you? Maybe it is the one you just referenced, the Trillion Dollar Coach is what it's called.
I don't know if that's the end all right there. I always love Phil Jackson's stuff. Bill Walsh has some great things. I do have a quote. It comes from Colin Powell. I've always said that leadership is the art of making something happen that the science of management says is impossible. And I'll say that again. Leadership is the art of making something happen that the science of management says is impossible. And there are many, many things that go into leadership. Some people call it a servant leader, and I get that, and that is part of it. And there's part of it's being the technical authority as well. But really, at the end of the day, can you influence? Can you inspire? Do you have insight? I love it. I've had a very strange career in that I've been a head coach, a preponderance of my career, an OC, a DC, a special teams. Only 1 year in my 40 plus years of coaching was I a position coach. How about that? I was always in charge of something. So I've tried and I've failed. I've failed a lot as well. It's not easy. It's complex.
Man. But this is the cool thing, is like, you appreciate that and you understand the importance of it. So you're not afraid to like say that. I think a lot of people have, we're scared of failure and we're scared to admit failure. But the cool thing about you, coach, is you got a good energy about you, which again, I will state this. I know you mentioned it was your wife's doing, but like just knowing Cody from high school, like, dude, it shows. Like, I think it takes, you know, both parents probably had a little bit of an influence on that. So good work on that.
When he got the job at Idaho State, everybody's going, oh, I bet you're proud. I'm going, hey, I was proud of this kid a long time ago, but all our kids, we just really tried to raise good people. We weren't trying to raise athletes. We weren't trying to raise leaders. We're trying to raise good people. My daughter, Brittany, has got four great kids. She teaches over at St. Mark's, and she's getting her PhD from Boise in education. And like, you know, I'm just proud of our kids that they go out. My other son's in coffee, and he's got a big, big heart to kind of help improve the growers down in Central and South America, their lives. So they all take a different take on what it is they're doing, but it's not just their industry. My other daughter works at Nike, and, you know, they look to inspire a bunch of people through the things they do. So yeah, I have four kids and they're all out game changers. And I'm proud of that a lot. And like I said, my wife, she's Mother Teresa. So anybody that knows, there's a lot of people in Boise that know us, No, Misty's the, she's the glue.
Dude, I love it. I love, give props to the wifey for sure. I think it's awesome. It speaks to you guys, you know, abilities as parents, and the kids are awesome too. So, you know, what's the, as you look back on your entire career thus far, which is not over, your career is not over as a coach. You're doing a lot of things right now, and you have a lot of things that you can help with in and outside of sport. But at this point, coach, if you look back, what is the biggest life lesson that sports have taught you?
The biggest lesson. Well, I would say this. There are those that have been humbled and those that are about to be humbled. And life to me, there's a lot of little trinkets that go in there, but truly, I think the biggest moniker is thriving through failure, learning about failure, existing through failure. Because you're going to fail a lot. And if you go on the journey, and I'm into the hero's journey, you have to leave your comfort zone. You have to try and you have to fail. And there'll be people that snicker. But learning to deal with adversity and thriving in adversity, and sports teaches of that. I had to bench Cody at Colorado. You know, they say, well, is that hard? I go, yeah, it was hard. But I mean, it's hard. Everybody has got a backup quarterback. And I think, again, in sports with parents, everybody wants their kid to play. I remember I complained to my dad one time about playing time. He said, you might want to work harder. I was on the team at Davis, and I came, and I told my dad I apologized because I didn't play very much. And my dad said, hey, son, I don't know if you know this, but the name on the helmet is not yours. Okay? You are here for them. They're not here for you. But learning those lessons of adversity and thriving in adversity, and you're not playing, and how do you get out of that? You strike out. You strike out a lot. You miss shots. You lose games. I mean, I tell people truthfully, Shane, I've been a National Coach of the Year 3 times. I've been fired 3 times. And I know everybody has their opinion about me or whatever, and it's not that I don't want to say that I don't care, but it's all about knowledge acquisition, experience, and it's not all going to go perfect. You're going to have a flat tire. You're going to go bankrupt. You're going to get fired. You're going to lose games. You're going to strike out. You're going to, but just keep getting in the fire. That's what it's about. It's about getting in the fire, and sometimes you're going to get burned, and sometimes it's going to be glorious, but just keep throwing yourself out there.
That is so awesome, man. Like, super awesome response. So, coach, where can we find you? You mentioned email. Is there any, like, if people want to utilize you for your services and pay you for your services, like you mentioned, if you're helping businesses or if you want to get in front of people to speak or anything of that nature, how can we get a hold of you?
Yeah, well, you can easily hit me right in my email, which is danhawkins34. I always tell people, Walter Payton, that was my guy. I played nothing like Walter Payton, although I dreamt a lot of times that I would, but 34, danhawkins34 at Gmail. I am on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. I am on Instagram. I don't really showcase that. I couldn't tell you how many followers. I don't care how many likes I get. I actually haven't been on Twitter for a while. I got to let it go. Sometimes it's just too much. I just can't take the information overload. So sometimes I let it go, but there's a lot of good things on there. But yeah, I am on Facebook too. I actually, all my international people deal in Facebook. So that's really why I'm on there a lot. And then some of my old high school buddies, but yeah, they can find me on social media or my email. And if I can help you, I'm more than happy to.
Awesome. Awesome. So what we'll do then for you, coach, is I'll link those here in the description. So those who are listening, make sure to check those out. If you want to get a hold of him, you know, perhaps do the email, but if you want to follow him, just feel free to check out his social media channels. But coach, I just want to say thank you. I want to say thank you for joining me this Friday morning as we're recording this and being willing to like take the time out of your day, being willing to respond back to me. That actually means a lot. I don't forget those things. So I just hope, you know, like, it means a lot to me. So thank you for being willing to join me and share all your insight. Cause I know the listeners, I'm going to get hit up and they're going to be like, dude, that was sick. That's what I'm going to get hit. I already know how this is going to go. Like, that was an amazing interview. Cause when you bring insight to the table like that, it's a game changer. It's a game changer. So I appreciate your time and willingness to join me, man.
Well, my goal always in coaching, my goal was to make a positive difference. I hope that's your goal with your, like, that's my goal. It wasn't a win. It wasn't a win champion. It wasn't to coach Division I football, or it wasn't that. It was never that. It was just I wanted to be a good husband, a good person, a good father, but I just want to make a difference in coaching because my coaches did that. That was really my goal. So if I can make a difference for a parent or a coach or a business owner, I'm more than happy to help. And that to me is what I live for, really.
Heck yeah. Well, I have no doubt that you're making a difference in this interview. So those who are listening are going to love it. So thank you. You made a difference for me too. So I appreciate you. And for all those who are listening to the podcast, again, if you enjoyed the interview, leave us a review. Let us know what you liked about what Coach Hawk had to say. And just tap in because we'll be coming to you next week with another one. Take care. Guys, thanks so much for listening to another episode of my show. Now, if you could go and do me a favor, head over to iTunes, give me 5 stars, and leave me a review, it would be greatly appreciated. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your support.